into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No, I'm...
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now, it has been a long time coming, but the quarterfinals of the Heineken Champions Cup are finally upon us. On Sunday afternoon on the OTB Sports app, you can hear live commentary, full live commentary of Ulster's visit to Toulouse. Neil Tracy and Bernard Jackman are on duty for that one. That one kicks off at 12:30 on Sunday. Of course, we'll have every score from the Aviva as Leinster take on Saracens on Saturday afternoon and Off the Ball with John Duggan. That one kicks off at 3:00. And to preview the return of the Heineken Champions Cup, I'm delighted to say Brian O'Driscoll is with us. Brian, good morning to you. How are you doing?
Good morning, Ger. How are you?
Yeah, good. So listen, I want to start with the Ulster game just briefly to talk about that, because what we saw from Leinster was a clear template of how to beat Ulster. Toulouse are 13-point favourites for this. If you're the Ulster coaching ticket, if you're the Ulster captain, how are you trying to convince the team that they're in this game with a chance of winning it?
I think you have to say that they've nothing to lose. I think they can go down there with the freedom that it is a freebie. I would say very little expectation in Ulster, very little expectation in France, certainly, and across the rest of Europe, that this is going to be anything other than a home victory. So on the basis of that, I think the shackles are off. You can play with the freedom of being able to express yourself, throw it around, and give it as good a go as you possibly can. I think you sometimes get a bit tighter when there's more of an onus on an away win. This is definitely not the case. And I'm sure there'll be plenty of people that will probably be lumping on Toulouse at -13 as well. Because I watched a little bit of them against La Rochelle last weekend. And, fast, hard track, big physical dominant pack. But some of those backs are running some exhilarating lines. They're absolutely on top form at the moment. So Ulster are going to have to bring their A game to even stay in the game with them. And all they can expect is to try and be in the game with 15, 20 minutes to go and just put a screw in the heads of Toulouse that maybe they're not going to have it all their own way. But I think it is it's very much balanced in one favour because of the form of Toulouse this last year in particular.
Yeah, even the last two games. The first game back in the new top 14 season, they were beaten 33-30, but they had two men sent off and still managed to make an incredible comeback against Clermont. So that wasn't a bad form line.
Did you see this? The try they had with 13 men?
No.
It's already one of potential for a try of the season, end to end. Like, it started with Ramos throwing a ball between his legs on counter-attack. Who does that with two men down? But it's just the mentality and the attitude. And I think when they play with that freedom and that kind of joie de vivre, they're very, very hard to live with. And I anticipate that Ulster are going to have their hands full, no doubt. It's going to be warm down there. And they're going to have to be considerably better than they've been in these last four games since we started again. But It's cup rugby and it's knockout rugby and things can happen. Men can get sent off. There can be small little differentials between sides and refereeing decisions, or someone gets injured, or two players get injured in a key position. Lots can happen in rugby. So they go down with a chance, but it's going to be very, very difficult. Of all the quarterfinals, I think that's probably one of the more clear-cut ones from a neutral's perspective. But never say never.
From a betting perspective, it's a 9-point spread in the Leinster Saracens game, and I've got to say, I think that's ridiculous.
You reckon? Yeah,
I think it's Saracens a much closer game. No,
Saracens are I think.
Should it not be like a 3-point?
It's just
like
it's really hard at the moment. It's very difficult with Leinster to understand the spread. It really is, because they have that capability of blowing out in the last 15, 20 minutes and scoring two or three tries and completely putting a gloss on solid performances. And all of a sudden against Ulster, was it 25 points or something in that region?
Can I ask you about that, right?
22 points.
Okay, yeah. So Because I've been reading the Bernie Brogan book this week, and it's about the transformation of the Dublin football team from that swashbuckling side that were going to cure all of football's ills, and then Donegal came along and ambushed them. And after that, they became a team who would only take the opportunities that were presented to them, but they would never lose the ball. And as a result, they started to win games much tighter, but it was never in any real significant doubt that they would, because they were controlling them. Is that kind of what Leinster are doing in these games, where they could be blowing teams out earlier, but it's like, no, we're going to wait, we're going to exhaust you, and then we are going to overrun you when the opportunity comes?
I think they're very concise in what they're trying to do. I don't think it's that they're not trying to blow teams away in the early parts of the game. You have to remember, too, that any side can come hard at you for 15 or 20 minutes, and it's very hard to put a team to the sword very early in the game, irrespective of their calibre, because they're fresh, they're hungry, they've got a bit of desire, appetite to not be humiliated if they're massive underdogs. So it's very, very hard in the professional game to break teams down in 40, 50 minutes. That comes in the last 30, the last 20 minutes, when you know the better sides, the better 23-man squads are able to unload a more impressive bench and for them to have a big impact and take advantage of tired bodies. So I don't think Leinster are going out with the plan of trying to grind teams down and wait for that last 20 or 30 minutes, but they're a patient side. They don't panic. They went 5 points down against Ulster early on in the final last weekend, and at no point is there any sense of panic. They just, you know, think about a process of getting back down into territory to be able to create opportunities for themselves. And they have this ability to score right across the board. We've seen how impressive their rolling maul has been, but their pick and jam game's very good. You know, their kick game now has teams guessing as to how aggressively they can get off the line. Their passing game out wide, their wingers and fullbacks can score tries with footwork. So they're a very, very difficult team to read. And on the basis of that, they feel as though they can answer an awful lot of questions put to them, and that they have scores. They can create scores from lots of different scenarios. And I think that's what makes them such a difficult team to beat, on top of having a very, very impressive defensive structure. They're not impervious to, you know, the odd error or getting a little bit narrow, but you know, you look at their whole skill set, they don't seem to ever dip below kind of a 7 out of 10 performance. And that's what we've seen in the last 3 or 4 games. Without them really firing, they've still been able to comfortably get the job done, even in perceived closer games. Even in 3 or 4 point games, it's always felt a little bit more relaxed than that.
Yeah, that was the kind of the analogy with the Dubs, where it was like, actually, whatever you do here, we're always going to be able to answer it. And we know you're punching yourself out as this is happening. And when we need to, we're going to go back and score again. That defensive structure is going to be tested in a way that it hasn't been tested so far since the resumption this weekend. It's a real pity that Owen Farrell, from a neutral's perspective, sabotaged his participation in this game this weekend, because, you know, like, there's a lot of the same bodies. I know they've lost some key individuals from last year's team, but there's a lot of the same bodies there. That culture is still there. This is the one game all year since they had their points deduction handed down to them that they have circled and gone, okay, we see what you're doing, we're coming for you. And it's the end of a trilogy between these two teams, where it's like, you know, there's a lot riding on this for Saracens.
It's them against the world, isn't it? It's them where everyone wants to hate Saracens now. You know, they're cheats and they got their just rewards. Now they're demoted down to the championship. And it's only them that are thinking, wow, how brilliant would it be that we've been relegated and we've been somewhat humiliated publicly, but yet we've still gone on to manage to win the Champions Cup. I think that would be an incredible story and something that they're very much clinging on to. It's going to be what they're looking to for the next, you know, over 12 months, because, you know, going down to the championship, you'd imagine it'll be a formality for them to come back up. But, you know, there's not going to be the same attention. They won't be getting the same quality game time. They won't be playing against the best players in the world week on week, or the best players in the UK even week on week. So this is, you know, this is the swan song for Brad Barrett, swan song for Richard Wigglesworth. They don't want it to be their last game. So they are going to throw absolutely everything into it. But the reality is they don't have 7 of the 23 that were involved in the final last weekend, and a couple of very, very important players for them, particularly in the pack. You look at Will Skelton gone, you look at George Cruz gone, Lamas Tataly, who came off the bench after 20 minutes against Leinster last year when it looked, you know, with both props gone, with Mako gone, and was it Barrington started, and Lamas Tataly and Koch came in and played 60 minutes and were incredible. You don't have that reserve, that strength of depth coming in now if you have those sort of injuries, or even on the 50 or 60 minute mark, to be able to match if you know Leinster, if they have the likes of Porter on the bench. So it's, you know, it's going to be an interesting game. I can understand why it's a 9-pointer, because Leinster have been very, very impressive, but there's a grudge match between these two. And it is a shame that Owen Farrell isn't starting. I wish he was, because I think it would make he epitomizes everything good about them, and maybe a little bit bad of them, that they play right on the edge, and that's been his game. But it is a shame, because you want to see him against Sexton. You want to see that aggression and that desire. I love watching Owen Farrell. Whether you love him or loathe him, he's very interesting to watch, because he plays right on the line, and that's what you want with the biggest competitors in the world, in the game that you love, is players that want to really bust a gut to get every last sinew out of their career.
How important is little subplots in this? Obviously, that would have been one great one. Mauro Itoje versus James Ryan is hopefully another one we see. It was a slightly narky James Ryan who played against England in the Six Nations, and he came in for some criticism after that. And you're like, hang on a second. We've been asking for him for ages and ages and ages to be that, and he's got to work out how that works and how it manifests itself. I'm all
that
for
was
it.
Great. Yeah, that was so good to see, and it didn't shock me. You know, the week after Paul O'Connell had been in camp, and you could see the pictures of him and James Ryan having conversations at training, and yeah, listen, you know, I'd made a comment that maybe they just lacked a little bit of thuggery in the pack, that nasty edge. And I don't know whether, I'm not saying that that's a reaction to that, but it was, from my perspective, it was lovely to see, because we'd seen the athlete and the workhorse that James Ryan is. You want to see someone that has a bit of hate in them as well, has that little bit of an edge, that is willing to push the boundaries as to what the legalities of the game are. You don't want you know, players to go around and you know, from the opposition's perspective, to be seen as a little bit of a soft touch if they're, you know, great athletes, but, you know, do they have a soft underbelly? Well, let me tell you, James Ryan certainly doesn't, because of his performance, but all the more because he reinforced it with being a bit nasty against England. And that's about setting a tone, setting down a marker against players that you're going to play against for the next, you know, 9 or 10 years you might play with in a line setup, and you want to earn their respect. And you're not going to do that just from, you know, clearing them out and, you know, tapping them on the back after a good shot. You're going to get that from having a nasty edge to you, and to, you know, to upsetting them and winding them up. And that's part of the game now as well, of putting others off their game while you are the aggressor with them. So I was really impressed to see that, and hopefully we'll see a bit more, provided, you know, he doesn't step over the mark too much.
Yeah, too much. A little bit is fine. I don't mind occasional penalties here and there at this stage of his career. It's like he can work them out in a couple of years. But in the meantime, lay down that marker.
Totally. And Itoje's been doing it for a few years now. And James Ryan's only a couple of years younger than him, I think. But, you know, we've... Again, Itoje epitomised everything about Saracens. He's all in your face and he's tapping lads on the head and all that stuff that you hate. But, you know, at the same time, he's pulling his team together. He's a guy that you look to, that's winding up the opposition, a bit like Quinny did back, you know, years ago, stepping on lads' toes when the referee's having a word to him. That stuff actually counts for something. It's, yes, it's gamesmanship, but it's all, you know, it's the mental side of the game as well, of getting into the opposition's heads and trying to deny them their top performance and put them off their game. And if you're able to do it while still concentrate on your own, well, all the better. But yeah, that battle between Itoje and Mauro will be, or Mauro and Ryan will be spectacular, because everyone's talking about them as potential Lions second row partners, Alwyn Jones, might have something to say about that. But it's mouthwatering, and they'll definitely, on the back of the last time they played one another, be looking out to throw shots at each other, no doubt.
I know you made the point about how many players who played in the final and were involved in that match day 23 for Saracens are gone. But when you look at the ones who are still there, it is a who's who of world-class talent. Toje's one, the Vinopolas or others, and they've got great talent at the backs as well. So there's enough there that if Leinster are 2% off, this game will be just out of reach very quickly, or at some point in the second half, like looking up, we're 10 points down here now and there's only 20 minutes left to go. Like, this game could get away from Leinster if they're in any way off.
Well, I can, no doubt. Saris have been playing some really good rugby as well the last few weeks. They're obviously playing with the freedom that they don't have anything at stake other than building a bit of confidence for this quarterfinal. They have quality players, even in the non-internationals. If you look at Jackson Ray is the ultimate club player, who's been brilliant for them, the only one to play in all six of their pool matches. You've got Brad Barrett, who's a previous international, but has been an absolute phenomenon for Saracens for the last 5 or 6 years in particular, and been a catalyst for a huge amount of their success. And then you've got some firepower as well. Before, I think Alex Good is heading off to Japan after the European Cup. You've got Sean Maitland, who I have to say has impressed me an awful lot more over the last couple of years with what he's done for Saracens in particular. So they've got plenty of firepower. Elliot Daly, another one. So yeah, they've got match winners there if they can put a good performance together. So Leinster are going to need to bring at very least the standard they did last weekend, and probably a level above that. But my sense has been that they've been in kind of somewhere between third and fourth gear. I think they're going to need to be between fourth and fifth gear to really, you know, put on a proper performance against Saracens and nullify their firepower.
Ross Byrne's performance last week kind of kicked off a long conversation about the understudies to Johnny Sexton and exactly where they're playing, and it kind of fed into the conversation about Ian Madigan that had happened last week when you were talking about how deep he was. He was on the show this week and he was like, yeah, actually, talking with Dwayne Peel, I totally take on board what you were saying about how his own game particularly, he had been too deep at various stages over the last while. Is this just something that Irish out-halves are going to have to live with from now on? Sexton takes the ball at the line and changes the point of the attack, physically brave, putting himself at risk from time to time, but that everybody else just has to be able to do that in their game, or we're always going to be like, why are you playing back there?
Yeah, I think, you know, you've got to find a halfway house. And I think Johnny, you know, Johnny has taken some risks that he hasn't needed to before. Remember that Scotland game a few seasons ago where Joey had to come on and you know, he threw an intercept and then, or he caught an intercept from Finn Russell. Well, Johnny had taken 3 or 4 huge collisions because he took the ball too aggressively to the line. I think you've got to find a happy medium. And that's what I would suggest with the other 10s. You're never going to be that, you know, well, certainly from a visual perspective so far, other than Harry Byrne, I don't think any of them are as aggressive as Johnny. But if you can get to a point where you commit the defence to a certain degree on the inside and create space outside, that's going to be enough. You're going to have to cop the occasional shot for sure. But the big thing for me, besides, you know, taking it to the line, is the manner in which you take it to the line, how straight you're hitting the ball, how much you're not crabbing across the field and throwing the pass in the same direction as you're running. I think you've got to hit the ball the way it's coming at you, and straighten the line, and that sits down at the defence, and that stops them from drifting, and that's what creates space out wide. You know, marry that with being able to take it aggressively to the line and then pull the trigger at the right play, then you've got a great ball playing 10. And it was great to see Ross Byrne taking the ball a bit more aggressively to the line. He has the capabilities of a running game, and we saw it a few times. Got in behind, didn't quite get the offload away, recycled the ball. But that's what we want to see. That's where you're going to get respect from defences to sit down a little bit more. And that's what creates the space on the outside. When you have one or two goes yourself, take the ball nice and straight to the line. And then the third time you pull it, you know, right back to someone, you know, running a wide arc. Well, that's where you're going to have that, you know, tight three-quarter line, but someone to be able to beat them on the outside because of what you've done previously. So it's all that work that goes in before that creates space later on in the game. And he's learning that. There's no doubt that his game management is very, very good. just you want to add other aspects to the game. And I think the being an attacking option himself is definitely something that I was pleased to see at the weekend, and one of his best games for Leinster, undoubtedly.
Yeah, he's still only 25, which is very young in out-half terms. Two last things I want to ask you about. The first one is Will Connors. He is 6'4", 6'5", and he has been absolutely sensational in terms of the tackle count and the energy around the place. Harsh on Josh van der Fleer?
Yeah, it is difficult. Like, you know, Josh was probably the in-form seven in the group stages. You know, he had massive stats, massive top of the tackle stats. His ball carrying was very good. And just over the course of the last 6 months, a bit like John Cooney, you know, that break period has not served him well, because you get into a run of form and your confidence is high, and then you've a 6 month layoff. You don't hold on to that confidence for the 6 months. You've got to build that confidence again. And Will Connor has got a couple of starts. Was obviously showing well at training. His chop tackle game has been a revelation for Leinster, because you've got other guys trying to choke the ball. You've got Connors hitting guys on the advantage line, knocking them down immediately. And particularly when you're playing against ball carriers like Vunipola. I don't know if Michael Rhodes is going to be playing at the weekend. Mako, you know, Maro, you look at those guys. If you've got a chop tackler that is going to be able to nullify that upon receipt of the ball, well, that is a huge asset to have. Because Josh was man of the match last weekend, of course it's going to be a tough call, but I do think it is horses for courses. And Will Connors, I'm excited to see a little bit more of him. I think there's more to his game than just a chop tackler. But, you know, that's definitely going to be the focal point for him. He'll have been hunting, you know, Billy Vunipola all week. If he does get a start in the seven jersey, you know, Vunipola will have had a bib on all week, and Connors will have just been lining himself up in the relevant defensive positions to be able to get in and chop his big legs.
It sounds like you are predicting a Leinster win, despite the fact that Saracens is still really good, but that Leinster should just be able to see them off this weekend?
Yeah, I think so. I think with, you know, if they can stop Billy Vunipola in particular, you know, it's well heralded about, you know, the stats of England and Saracen's success with him starting. Well, he is a huge go-to player. And if you can have him have a quiet enough afternoon, I think it'll go a long way towards stopping Saracens. I think they're definitely significantly reduced in standard because of the loss of Owen Farrell. He's a linchpin for them. He's the guy that drives everything, as well as being their goal kicker, you know, the leadership from him as well. So I do feel it's definitely swayed in Leinster's favour. And I think the bookies probably have it right. I'd say probably about Leinster by 7 or 8.
All right, good stuff, Brian. Thanks a million. Enjoy the game. Cheers.
Cheers, sure. I'll talk to you. Bye.
Take care.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.